Imbalance IT Solutions provides a unique consulting approach to transform your organization's data, cybersecurity, and hybrid cloud environments. We would like to welcome you to our podcast series we call The Balancing Act, discussing complex digital transformation. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Hello, listeners out there. This is Ryan O'Halloran, VP of Security Strategy here at Imbalance IT, bringing you episode 9 of the Balancing Act podcast series called The Building Bricks of Data Integrity. Today, we're going to discuss modern strategic methods to recover business operations from the world's most sophisticated threats, insider threats, and natural disasters. It's going to be a great episode. I have with me two very special guests. First, I'd like to introduce you to Imbalance IT's very own Chief Technology Officer, Michael Kaplan, who's the tip of the spear here at Imbalance, leading technical direction and a longtime technical subject matter expert. Michael, it's always great to see you.
Good to see you too, Ryan.
And then next, we're lucky to have with us Mr. Jason Cook. He's the acting field CTO at Rubrik. And Rubrik, if you're not familiar, is a data security company that's focused on delivering data protection world-class and recovery for the hybrid cloud. Jason, thanks for joining us today as well.
My pleasure. Glad to be here with you guys.
Awesome. We appreciate it. Would you be so kind to get our conversation started here with a little bit of background on yourself and your mission at Rubrik?
I would, and I'd be happy to do that. So I'm now going into my 8th year. This May will be my 8th year with Rubrik. My career is kind of a patchwork quilt, like I think most people in IT are. You know, I have some time that I began my career as an IT practitioner. Most of my time in IT has been in some sort of sales organization or sales capacity. I've led people. I've been a field CTO. I've worked for reseller partners. I've done consulting work. But, you know, my focus at Rubrik has largely been being out in front of partners and clients and prospective customers and talking to them about, well, what we think is the most important thing right now. And that is, there's a lot of focus on preventing cyber attacks and cyber crime from happening. And don't mistake us, still got to do all that, right? And, you know, there are millions of threats that are thwarted every single day successfully, thank goodness, right? But there's a kind of an imbalance, right? Which is the threat actor only has to be right the one time, right? And all of us, particularly IT practitioners at our customers, have to be perfect 100% of the time. And that's just not a realistic ratio.
I was going to say, that sounds easy, Jason.
Yeah. Right? So that's some tough odds. So what we're saying is, all right, guys, if we're talking about cyber resilience, right, well, that includes how are we detecting threats, how are we thwarting threats, of course. But what it also means is what happens when we are breached and we do have to do a recovery and we have to resume operations. And I, in my mind, in today's world, that's the name of the game. It's funny, I was watching this show late last night with my wife. I'd gotten home from St. Louis, and it's called, just came out on Netflix. It's called Zero Day, and it's Robert De Niro. You have? Okay.
Yeah. If anybody really listening hasn't seen it, I was actually really impressed. It was good.
Were you? Okay, because I'm turning to my wife. I'm like, yep, this could really happen. And you know, Ryan and Michael, what's shocking to me, I don't know about you guys, is that the Big Bang hasn't occurred yet. Like, there hasn't been that financial system collapse that right. That take out of the, you know, Eastern Seaboard's power grid. Like, it, I'm just shocked that threat actors haven't figured out a way to
there hasn't
do that.
Been that, yeah, that global experience where we really see how fragile we are.
Exactly. Even though, like, there's been, you know, a lot of notable attacks on particular businesses. We've been let known that, oh yeah, the Russians and the Chinese have been in the CIA and the NSA for quite some time snooping around, but still, like, nothing like the TV show, right? But what struck me about the show was the name of the game is service resumption. It's not so much that you're going to get breached. That's just going to happen. There really isn't anything to do about it. Even the most sophisticated threat defenders couldn't do anything about this zero-day vulnerability, but they could action, the resumption of services and systems and getting people. And that I feel like is how you take the power away from the threat actor. Like, congratulations, you successfully attacked us, but we're up and running less than 24 hours or 48 hours later. So what you thought was going to be a big takedown was a blip in the radar. So, you know, long-winded way of saying that's really what we talk a lot about. And our solution is that it's the confluence of secure backup copies. So you have something to recover from, that are, you know, that are protected, that are, you know, authentication controlled, and that are fast, but also an analytics layer to tell you, like, hey, you got some bad stuff going on in those backups. Let's make sure that when you actually go to do recoveries, you're not going to recover the bad stuff. So that's kind of the meat and potatoes, guys, of what I talk a lot about in really every role that I've ever had. Even when I was leading people, I maintained connectivity to the customers because I just really enjoy being in those spaces.
And, you know, you said some great points there that I couldn't agree more with. One being that I think we've looked at backups or disaster recovery for some reason, accepted it as like a proactive defense.
Right.
Not a reactive, you know, fire.
Right.
Like, well, we have backup. Yeah, but that's not prevention. That's in case, worst case, right? But I think like that's kind of coming to mind now. Okay, we got to shift forward a little bit. Michael, I want to switch over to you. Can you talk a little bit about, in general, what you see in the Rubrik portfolio paired with customer challenges or other technologies of how they're, you know, approaching security differently? Because I think one of the things that we're seeing now is, yeah, let's understand what that data actually is and where the sensitive pieces are and find out it's getting infected sooner so that we don't have these windows of dirty backups for 8 months, right? I'd love to hear your take on that, Michael.
Yeah, Ryan, you know, appreciate it. I think in our conversations with our clients, and you can certainly talk to it quite well, you know, it's very common nowadays. You'll see across the Verizon data breach report and plenty of others, the traditional initial access to breakout time is no longer in the weeks or months. It's pretty rare. It's usually within a week, initial access. And nowadays, it's usually a compromised set of credentials. So your preventive measures that clients have been investing in, the CrowdStrikes, the Defenders, the Sentinel Ones of the world, don't necessarily understand that, hey, this is a good set of credentials, but they're kind of doing things maybe a little bit strangely, but I don't know nearly enough from the signals that I'm getting to say, hey, this shouldn't be happening unless the threat actor is doing something silly in terms of not masking where their IP address is coming from. And then usually then you can detect that. So now you're dealing with a week of maybe 5 to 7 days from initial access, data exfiltration, and then usually executing some version of a ransomware attack in the hopes that even if you can recover, we can hopefully double extort you and just publish the information anyways. Our clients are struggling with the fact that, hey, I have all of these backups, but have I even tested, what does this recovery look like? How would I actually go through and recover all of these systems? Do I have the processes documented to say, here's what I need to do first? So do that application profiling. What is critical to resume that business quickly? And then I think traditionally, if you look at, you know, more traditional data protection solutions or security solutions in the marketplace, you would engage your incident response team in the event that you have that bad day. And they're going through each individual backup point and being able to have to go through, run your forensic tooling and validate, okay, is this the point at which we were hit? No, okay, let's do that again. And so that whole work recovery time. So a lot of these vendors will give you a guarantee, hey, I can, you know, make sure if you're taking the right amount of backups, your recovery point is great, but that recovery time, and one of the things that I've always told my clients is it's really tough to guarantee how quickly we can resume normal operations. We can get everything spun up, but if you have an incident response team that needs to do all of that processing, or your application teams are basically running 24/7 because of that, there's a lot of burnout, and then there's a lot of risk of protracting that time to resume normal business operations. And even then, if you don't know, to your point, Ryan, where your sensitive data is, I don't know whether this random maybe marketing server was the only thing that was breached and exfiltrated, or was it something that had valuable information like PII data or credit card information or something that could lead to worse things down the road. And if you don't have all of that together, it's a real struggle to understand from breach to recovery, how bad is the situation that we're dealing with? And I think that's where we've had a lot of success with, you know, partnering with Rubrik within our client base to try and drive those types of outcomes, gain that better insight to, one, shrink that window, but also understand what are there opportunities ahead of time to potentially secure your data in a more effective way to just create enough friction that maybe it's less valuable for a threat actor to try and even and go after that sensitive data.
Dude, spot on. I mean, there's two extremely important themes there that you hit on. One, right, we just talked about how the backup is not the proactive. The proactive is identity protection and understanding its behavior and anything outside of that behavior to question it and hop on it immediately. The reactive is faster. And part of the reactive isn't how good your storage is or anything like that. It's understanding what the data is, if you even care. Do I even care? Is there even anything sensitive on it? I don't know.
Exactly. What is it's a minefield. What is materiality versus immateriality? Because now, every company is going to manage and think about that differently. And if you don't have any intelligence, then thereby any breach is a material breach because you don't know.
Yeah.
And too often than not, historically, backups or even a disaster recovery type replication solution was utilized as an insurance policy. Right. But things have become significantly more complicated where you need better intelligence to just say, rather than, oh, my data is protected, oh, I know exactly where the breach happened, or I know exactly where the situation happened. Not to say that you don't still have to plan for, hey, a pipe bursts in your data center or the types of things that actually do require traditional disaster recovery. But more often than not, everybody's bad day is the threat actor gets inside, does some damage, encrypts my Active Directory forest or somehow compromises my Entra ID or whatever authentication mechanism, and then I'm hard down completely. And I've seen even instances where, you know, if you don't have some of those protections in place, you can't even get into your backup system to execute the recovery. And that's everybody's worst day, because then that insurance policy that you thought was great is completely useless until you can, do a full-fledged, forest recovery of your Active Directory environment.
100%. Ryan, I love what you said, proactive versus reactive protection, right? And the new landscape is threat actors and adversaries are logging in. They're not breaking it, right? And Michael, you nailed it. We nailed several things. Most notably, the difference between backup and recovery. That was what we did 20, 30 years ago to account for human error, logical, physical corruption, natural disasters, etc. Well, now we need a new rider on that insurance policy called cyber attack. And that is a whole different set of variables, as you guys well know. The other thing you touched on, which I think is critically important, is sort of the difference between imbalance and Rubrik. You guys, in my frank opinion, have a much more important role, which is actually taking technology like Rubrik and making it realistic and an actual outcome in a client environment. And it starts with getting them to think about all of those things that you articulated, Michael, because I think that's where the market is evolving, and it's where we all have opportunity, which is because I don't think everybody's quite there yet. If they were, we wouldn't be reading stories about how in every major and notable breach, backup copies or backup systems were breached, attacked, and rendered unusable, and threat actors and adversaries know that. And so from that perspective, that really, I think, is the crux of how Rubrik has been designed and why what I said at the outset rings true, which is that to us is the most important thing. Anybody can take a, Rman integrated backup of an Oracle database and plop it on some storage device, right?
Right.
But who can ensure not only end-to-end data security and full trust of that whole process, write it into an immutable storage that's isolated and separate from the network, but then also do the analytics, as Michael talked about, to see things that endpoint solutions and other, you know, SIM SOARs and security solutions that are looking at different parts of the equation are not going to catch. And then also to Michael's point, how do I know where to go back to? You know, like doing security analytics is actually on backups is a really novel idea, because if you want to figure out where patient zero was, boy, you have a whole timeline factored in to the backups you're taking.
And last thing is you want is their dwell time, because, right, they're living off the land. They evaded the EDR. They got the identity already. They're going to check things out undetected. I mean, now it's not like hit you with ransomware over the weekend and get out. No. It's let me see the scope of everything I can possibly do in here.
Correct.
And then that whole window is just dirty. Right. It's just dirty backups, you know. Oh. And then another thing I want to talk about real quick is Michael hit on the work recovery time. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Consider this, because that is the key, right? And very rarely in a DR test do I see red teaming happening against the environment by a penetration tester that's actually impacting production, which is what you would actually experience.
Right.
Also not going back and trying to make sure you're confident enough to restore your identity system that it's not clean, right? And this is before we even, you know, boot up the flash, right? And that's just, it's so important to consider this.
That's,
you know,
right.
And it's unreal.
And that's why I think, Ryan, what you touched on earlier as well is, like, this thing is evolving, right? Like, and rapidly, because it's the confluence of all these things. Yes, we've got secure backup copies because backups are under attack. But then you mentioned sensitive data and identity and who has access to what? Where's all my stuff? How do I get visibility? And I think that's where this whole thing is starting to converge into data management. I mean, if you look at our portfolio, that's really where it is even today, and certainly where it's headed. It's like all of these roads are sort of merging into this epicenter, which is data management in my mind, right? You have the backup and recovery aspects, of course, but then you have the sensitivity, the who has access, the identity. And then you have things like being able to contextualize, classify AI. One of the things that people struggle with on AI is how do I ensure that what goes into the LLM or to the RAG is not sensitive or classified, so that if, you know, Joe user or Sarah user is doing a search, they're not going to see something they're not supposed to. Well, there has to be tool sets that are kind of on the front end of that. So that's why I see, like, this whole thing is sort of like collapsing, because to your point, threat actors are very diverse these days in terms of the types of attacks they launch. It could be extortion, double extortion with exfiltration based. It could be deletion, encryption. I tend to see more of the former, because why bother encrypting or deleting data? If I can capture what's sensitive and hold it hostage, you're just as likely to pay me as you would be if I encrypted your data. And, you know, it's just the scope of what damage I might want to do about the speed and the dwell time. And these people are getting in, they're well-funded nation states, you know, they're getting in quickly, they're hitting hard, and they're getting out.
You have no time.
That's it. Because they want to monetize this quickly. You know, it's a business.
One thing you hit there, and then I'm going to switch over to Michael. When, like I was talking about before, those blind spots of not understanding what the data is, that is a painful recovery for sure. But it also means that you can't possibly use that data to do something special with AI because you don't understand it, right? So, Michael, what is secure and responsible AI to you? Because as Jason said, and that was really interesting way to put it, it's end-to-end data management to be secure now. It is not, I have a way to recover my backups. I'd love to hear when you're talking with data platform, right, and all these other things and the quality of data, like how that ties into being responsible about understanding it.
Yeah, Ryan, you know, I think the biggest challenge that most clients have today, at least the ones that we're talking to primarily here in the Midwest, is a lot of them don't have a good feel for what data they have, where is it located, what is the overall quality, to even start thinking about connecting things like Copilot or other things. They might be way too permissive in terms of who has access to what, and people could realistically start asking a generative AI solution, or, you know, building your own internal LLM of some kind, hey, what is this data? And all of a sudden I'm surfacing far more sensitive data than I should have. And it's doing a lot of the data cleansing, the data normalizing, and especially the data security. And it's really hard to get clients to invest until usually something happens. They're too focused on how do I deliver new products and services to market faster? How do I achieve that velocity or create a differentiated experience for my user base? Then going through and doing, you know, a bit more of the mundane, like obvious things of how do I ensure that my data is secure? How do I ensure that, you know, you random person who might be, you know, an entry level help desk person doesn't have full access to everything in my environment, or, you know, sensitive corporate data or sensitive executive data, and going through the process of how do I identify all of that information and secure it? It's hard. And usually, at least historically, with a lot of the traditional solutions out there, it was usually the first line item that was budgeted, and it was also the first line item that was kicked off because it was too expensive and there were too many, I have to just keep the lights running projects going on. And it's one of those things that historically, unless you're a highly regulated industry that required a lot of that due diligence to be done on your data, was just always kicked on, you know, you kick the can because it's just painful. And it's a very slow, traditionally multi-year engagement because it's always evolving and you always have to plan for what's next. And I think that as we move into the world of generative AI solutions everywhere, it's only going to continue to compound. And that's where I think also you need systems that talk to each other, being able to feed information from something like a rubric into my SIM and SOAR platforms so that the signals that I'm getting there maybe feed in and provide an additional data point that, you know, your SOAR platform or something like CrowdStrike wasn't necessarily detecting first. And how do you, you know, continue to add that correlation? But that also requires organizations to work together more. So your traditional operations silos versus your security silos, they need to start coming together and continuously thinking, what data points do I have in my environment that can give me better intelligence throughout the information lifecycle of my data? And I think that that's a struggle for some organizations to know that there's going to continue to be this kind of merging and overlapping of roles, and how do I encourage our clients to work together? Because if you're a more well-oiled machine, usually you can do a lot more things to prevent or reduce the risk of a potential cyber attack.
Michael, that is awesome that you brought that up about the silos, right? Because one of the things that I strongly believe is right now we've talked about a lot of different pieces and how the future plays out with merging, you know, the security, governance, right, all that into data management. And when I think about that and coming into one view, I think what's more important than getting a dashboard of one view is getting a method of continuous education for your employees and a process that works. And that requires all of a sudden really understanding the other business units and working together, like you said. I think that there's technology now that's surfacing these things to have these discussions, but you still have to have those discussions, right? Jason, I'd love to hear your opinion on this. How do you see the future playing out with the merge of all these things? Would you agree that it's the work that we have to do and not necessarily the technology we're waiting for?
Well, I think it's a combination probably of the two things. I mean, because, listen, I feel like take AI, I feel like people want in on that game. They're not very often, to Michael's point, sure exactly what outcome they're looking for. They just know there's some power or some competitive edge or something to be unlocked with AI, right? And, you know, even just a few kind of test runs in ChatGPT, you really start to see the power of this thing and how you can really hasten the cycles it takes to do things like unlock competitive differentiation, advantage, even just analytics about your business in seconds, right? The challenge, of course, is we talked about the responsibility of, for those that steward the data, which I see as our job in a sense. Okay, well, with great power becomes great responsibility, or sort of is indicates great responsibility. So now what does that mean, particularly for companies that are publicly traded and have a lot of fiduciary risk of putting the wrong information in the wrong people's hands, let alone threat actors? Forget about them. How about badged employees? So I think, at least in terms of what I've been thinking about, and certainly what my company is thinking about and doing, is saying, well, what if we could make that thing, to your point, Ryan, like what if the technology could help solve that first? Like, what if we could just make the repos and the places where you're going to get the information from secure out of the get-go, right? So what if Rubrik becomes the platform by which you're actually building your RAGs against or targeting your AI against, and the data is already secure by proxy of doing that? It's already
so the data. Sorry to interrupt. So the data, if I'm understanding, the data lake I'm looking for, maybe I already have it.
Exactly. And it gets better. So the data itself is secure. There's obviously authentication controls and all the things that go into the core platform. But then there's the analytics that we've been talking about, that tag, that contextualize, will allow you to reclassify or reassign so that they won't show up in AI searches. And it's really, you know, I'm oversimplifying, but I do think it is that simple. If you can figure out how to create a secure foundation with AI and maybe leverage some technology that'll already do that for you, to your point, Ryan, then you're ahead of the game. Otherwise, you're going to consume Bedrock, or you're going to consume Copilot, or you're going to consume any of the different flavors, or perhaps you're going to roll your own on-prem with containers, et cetera, and your own vectors and things. And then you're going to have to point it at some data sources. And I'm willing to bet that the last thing you're going to think about is that data source secure? You know, like, who really does have access to that S3 bucket that has 7 billion objects in it? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
nobody really has the question on that. Yeah.
Yeah. I hear you. Michael, going back to you, because I know we're almost at time, and this has been an awesome discussion. What would you say, Michael, the right metrics are, right? Because we have to at some level measure this improvement, because we're asking for money, right? We're going to the business. What do you think is the meaningful metric, you know, for businesses to pay attention to that might influence their strategy on where to spend their time? Because again, we don't have time.
Yeah, it's always going to come down to a prioritization. You know, you usually have to solve the 80-20 rule. 80% of the solutions that you have to kind of put in need to be solved within, you know, probably that overall budget. So it's figuring out what use cases cover the greatest level of protection in your environment. Obviously, you're going to pay for the front end things, the email security, the identity, hopefully some version of identity security. And then once you get into the data protection solution, you know, it's great that you can start with, hey, I just need to ensure that my backups are protected and immutable. Day one, you know, that's a kind of a hard and fast requirement nowadays. And then if you want to start, you know, planning for the future and being able to get some of that, you know, sensitive data discovery, or being able to have that you know, threat hunting feature where in the event that you do have the bad day and you need to recover, that's always great. And then having a partner, whether it's Inbalance, whether it's Rubrik, that can also you know, assist our clients with, hey, you know, Rubrik has their ability to parachute resources in, because that's usually the biggest problem of anything. It's just time. How do I budget the time to do all of these projects on top of the backlog of other high value things that the chief digital officer, the CIOs of the organization are driving towards? You know, you have to figure out what that prioritization is. And sometimes it's a, you know, start small and, you know, plan for a multi-year kind of vision. But at the bare minimum, just ensure your data is protected, kind of full stop day one. And then ideally, hopefully you can sell the value of, if your organization's never done a business impact assessment or some level of due diligence and understanding what is the true cost of downtime, do I have information that is so valuable or regulated that I need to be sure that it's protected and secured? Usually, if you understand what those costs are, usually then you can also build that overall ROI or justification for investing in things. More often than not, unfortunately, those investments come typically after the fact. And usually it becomes an over rotation of, hey, I don't want this to happen again. But if you can build that story, and that's part of the value that that Inbalance can bring, is we can help understand all of those different nuances that, hey, the technology is going to enable a whole bunch of things, but we can help you get it to the point where it's actually consumable, or that you're actually getting the value out of this investment. Because if you just have the features and the capabilities and you aren't actually doing anything with it, it's also an investment in that maybe wasn't delivering the value that it could be. And if you aren't using it, even if you have that bad day, you might not know how to actually go about executing it. And it's building that muscle memory to understand, how do I leverage all of this functionally and encourage and enable your user base that's sometimes a little reluctant to learn something new, to that it's worth investing that time. One, it will grow your skills, but two, it'll also just protect the business. It'll protect your livelihood. It'll protect your job, because sometimes some of these events are, you know, business ending, unfortunately. And how do you encourage the use of these capabilities, which are starting to become much more prevalent throughout the industry, to get that insight and to use that as an empowering tool, as opposed to something that feels scary and you don't necessarily want to take that time to learn. And I think, you know, it's been really great having a partner like Rubrik and us being able to go to market together in terms of being able to tell that vision and tell that story to our clients.
Guys, we got to hit the road. I mean, the three of us would do some damage out there, I'm telling you. I mean, in my mind, that's the other thing, guys, is your Inbalance helps drive adoption. Because I work on that from my end, too. And, you know, I will say it doesn't happen often, but it happens more times than I would like, where I'll go in and a client that we've done a project with, they're not really extrapolating or leveraging the full capabilities of everything they have. And that is one, I think, the principal values to Michael's point about what Inbalance can provide is really, like I said, making that outcome real. Like, how does, now that I have threat analytics that I can pull into my SIEM or SOAR off of my data, i.e. from Rubrik, change the way I do security operations, just as one example, right? Or even things that are really simple, like, guys, you know, customer XYZ, you get hit by a cyber attack, and let's say it's broad range and far reaching, it's not just exfiltration, takes down production systems. What does that mean? Like, what is a minimum viable company XYZ? What do we need to have in order to recover and resume revenue as fast as humanly possible? And actually walk them through that, because to your point, Michael, it's just fascinating. Big companies, you know, I work with, that they don't have answers. And I'm like, guys, you just assume, like, oh, well, you're so big, you're so sophisticated, surely. No, you know, because nobody really sits in that space and thinks through that scenario or assumes breach, probably because they're so focused on prevention. And then the other thing, it's so big, nobody really knows what all the application dependencies are, you know? So if you have, you know, my ERP, well, what really does that touch? I don't know. You know, turns out there's an S3 bucket in Australia that we didn't know about that it leverages, right? You know what I mean? And it's having companies always like Inbalance that can come help them figure all of that out, so they know what a minimum viable company is, so that they're prepared. And that really, I think, to Michael's point too, this is really all is what to come down to, is just being prepared, you know, to have run through this, to test it, to have assumed breach, to assume this scenario, and then have tools, process, people, and technology that can help you address it when it happens. I mean, guys, isn't that as good as it gets? I mean, that's
as good as it gets.
Yeah.
And too often than not, most organizations are going to want to, you know, figure out who to blame and who can I prosecute in these situations.
Right.
And these are nation states. Like, unless we somehow figure out, unless you have a great connection politically and wants to invest in potentially starting something much greater than any of us,
you want to fight China?
We're not going to be able to be able to go back and, like, you know, somehow arrest somebody and bring somebody to justice. No. It's now just accepting the fact that you're only going to be the only person that gets in the news, that gets the blame, and you have to be able to build the justification for, I still care about my business, where my data is, how 100%. Sensitive is it? And you have to be able to build those controls in place and test them. You know, Ryan, I know that in your work, you help clients with doing certain tabletop exercises. And I think just the base level of education is so critical in understanding what to actually do in these events. Not only just having documented how do you actually execute the recovery, but how do I also make sure and preserve some of that forensic evidence? Because if you start rebooting systems and doing things, and if the team isn't empowered to understand what happens in a cyber attack and how do I make sure that I preserve as much forensic information as possible, that also is a big pain point and challenge, because you could exacerbate the issue or you could blow away critical information to helping you understand where did the breach come in, how was it executed, is there potentially a known, you know, decryption or recovery mechanism available as well in the event that you weren't protecting certain systems that also did get popped. You know, hopefully you do all of the right things, but also how do you empower your users to know, okay, when do I hit the red button to start the recovery? How do I make sure that I isolate my systems from you know, further attack? And then using the intelligence of something like Rubrik, how do I quickly roll back and know this is the exact point that the breach came in, using things like the turbo threat hunting capability to know, okay, I can make this as pain-free as possible, and then I can spend more time using you know, the sensitive data discovery piece to understand how bad is this to the business, and being able to provide that information, you know, either back to shareholders, or if you're a privately held company, at least being able to understand what that blast radius truly looked like.
100%. And I think, you know, to your point earlier too, like, if anything, indemnity and liability is obviously on the company, right, that got hit. And then there was SEC guidance that came out not long ago that actually holds CISOs liable. And there's been 4 individual cases where CISOs have been personally financially liable for a breach. I mean, and if you look at DORA and NIS too, there's so much, you know, CCPA, the SEC, what is it, the New York State guidance, what is that, CER 500,
NYDFS.
Yes, NYDFS. There's so much regulatory guidance which is transferring the onus onto the private sector. The public sector, the government, remember in the Biden administration, they came out with all that cybersecurity legislature. I don't know if that ended up getting passed, but I know it was brought before Congress. It's this, like, the government's not bailing you out if you're breached and you're a bank, or you're some public trust entity, or you're some critical infrastructure thing, it's on you. Like, I just see this movement in the market, in the regulatory space, the transition, the onus onto the private sector, which I believe is, well, it's a lot of things, but most notably it's opportunity for the three of us, because people now need to pivot to address not only how they're dealing with it on the front end, prevention, detection, but also how they're dealing with it when they get hit. And the way that most of the legislature is written is guys, we're not here to test you on whether or not you can stop cyber attacks. We assume you do that. We're here to test you on your cyber recovery capabilities and how long it will take you to resume minimum viable or critical operations. And I think that transition is really driving more and more boards and CISOs and executives to get into this position of, all right, I give up. We're probably going to get breached, or we have already, and I just don't know. What are we going to do about it?
Yeah, and Brian, I'll offer my final thought there. It's the biggest challenge right now is that too much of the cyber insurance world and the security world, in terms of, you know, publication to the world at large for a company, is all self-attestation based. And there's too, until these risks came in for CISOs from a financial liability space or even potential jail time, you just had to trust that everything that they said was gospel. And unfortunately, the truth was probably somewhere in the middle of, you know, it wasn't quite as bad as most people would assume it is, but it's also not nearly as rosy as they were also making it out to be. And I think that putting some of that onus on people to actually be very honest about how good their systems are, but then hopefully help, you know, from a rubric standpoint, an imbalance standpoint, helping to build that justification to our clients of how do you build that plan? Because the budget's not infinite, but you have to be able to build that vision and understand, okay, how do I get you from point A to point B in an effective way that's not going to be, you know, cost prohibitive? And it might be a multi-year journey. And I think that, Ryan, that's one thing that you've been doing a wonderful job in some of the VCSO work that you've done. It's, you know, it sometimes is a crawl, walk, run approach, but you have to be able to, you know, be honest with where you are in your business and within your cybersecurity capabilities, and then, you know, build that justification. And I think that that's something critical that we can all deliver to our clients, is being able to build that vision and help you execute against it.
You guys agree more? Spot on, right? I mean, I think before we close out, to sum it up, you need to be able to stand up and defend that you took responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And prove that with some evidence. And then part of being responsible is understanding the data. Because without understanding it, you certainly can't quantify the loss, right? When I think of risk, I think of financial loss. So this theme of data management end-to-end and being able to demonstrate resilience and not the silver bullet, that's awesome, guys. I really appreciate that insight. And I'm sure anyone who listens will as well, we hope. In closing, imbalance and rubric can guide you to confidently recover from data loss or from a cyber attack. You know, we greatly appreciate you listening today. I loved having the conversation we had today. I think it's very important, if not one of the most important conversations to be having. And also welcome everybody to check out a new episode each month. Until then, stay safe in the cyber world.
Inbalance IT Solutions wants to thank you for listening and invite you to join us for the next episode in our podcast series. Remember, Inbalance IT Solutions can help you transform your business's technology, and we welcome you to reach out to us for more information on our website at inbalanceit.com. See you on the next one.